Some replacement level dudes talking about their home team. Starting a Braves podcast was their daggum dream. They like Nick Markakis, even the long ball. One day they'll have more clout than Ken Rosenthal. Oh, you're listening to that Knockoff Nation podcast show. Oh. Knockoff Nation podcast show.
Heyo, it's another episode of the Knockoff Nation podcast show. I'm your host, Ken Hendricks. That's Josh Rhubarb. My wife is away from home, Brown. And that's JT. I live in a castle, Holston.
I don't live in a castle. That's just the name of my neighborhood.
I mean, sure, Donahue. You're just they've moved up, moved out. You live in a giant castle. When I come to visit you, I'm fully expecting a moat, JT.
Look
it's
at
gotta
this,
be like all the way around.
Look
the
at
house
this expensive bourbon and, behind him. Look at those
yeah,
bottles.
Yeah, see that.
That's Elijah Craig. That's $30.
Yeah, that's not expensive bourbon.
It's $30. Now the rum is from the Dominican. It's pretty nice.
Elijah Craig, by far the best $30.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, best $30 bottle you can buy.
Definitely. Like, you taste it, and you'd think, no way this was $30. Like, you'd be like, this is a $100 bottle. It's not good.
Yeah. I don't know about that, but it's still good. It's good stuff. It's just hot.
And they do have $100 bottles, but this is the basic Elijah Craig.
Yeah, yeah. I had Elijah Craig with some friends in Mississippi, and it was the first time I'd ever had it, and I was very impressed. It was like... It will sneak up on you, though, if you're not expecting it.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very hot drink.
The hottest drink I have, though, is this bottle of Whistle Pig 10-Year Rye.
Ah.
But
it's a slow burn. Like,
it is.
It's a gradual burn. Elijah Craig has a little bit of a fireball quality. Now, it's a lot better tasting than fireball, but it's got that little bit of a whoosh right at the back of your throat when you drink
it. I like a burn to my... Burns.
Oh, yeah.
I had some of my father-in-law last week or 2 weeks ago called Garrison Brothers. It's a Texas bourbon.
Yes.
I did not know. And it is legit good. Now, this is a $150 bottle of bourbon, but...
I've never had it, but I sold
my house that day, so to celebrate, he was like, here, let me pour you a glass. And it's one of the best bourbons I've ever had. It is fantastic. So.
What are you sipping on, Joshua, as we discuss bourbons?
This is Woodinville. Bourbon out of Washington State.
Nice.
Yeah, you guys couldn't afford it.
I probably couldn't. I've been sipping on that crap.
Crap?
Yeah. Basil Hayden's still.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit at a time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a slow drinker. I don't drink heavily. So, you know, I get a glass once every 2 months or something like that.
Same.
You know, I'm not a big drinker. To be honest, you could just give me a bottle of Whistle Pig and that's all I'd ever drink for the rest of my life if it were up to me. It's just easy drinking, good stuff. I do like Jameson. Speaking of like cheap alcohols, Jameson, I can drink it. It's like, it doesn't...
Beautiful. Beautiful radio there, Josh.
Some people... yes, thanks, Josh, for the snotty nose in the background there. But do you like Jameson, JT?
I do.
A friend of mine, y'all were talking about not, you know, being kind of slow drinkers. A friend of mine just put on Facebook, he's selling his bourbon collection.
Oh.
And I mean collection. 3 pages of printouts with prices next to them. The cheapest was a $50 bottle of Jack Daniel's Eric Church Edition that I wanted to buy as a trolling Christmas gift for somebody.
Yes!
But it was already sold.
He's not listening, so he didn't even know you just said that. So
the cheapest bottle was $50, and it went up to $1,500 for his bottle of Pack.
Wow.
Now, I've never been a collector. Like, I can't collect. I don't have the self-discipline to collect, to have that much bourbon in my house and not drink it all the time.
There's
no way.
I cannot make myself drink something that costs that amount of money.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, Whistle Pig's super expensive, but it's really not. You know what I'm saying?
Deathbed money. It's not
right.
Like
that 10-year bottle.
That 10-year bottle
you have is like $100, give or take, something in that neighborhood. You know, depending on where you go.
Right.
They've got a Whistle Pig that's super rare. That's like a 15-year age thing.
Yeah.
that's like $515 for a bottle. And I'm like, I can't bring myself to actually drink that.
And
like,
this is the same thing I have with whiskey collectors, baseball card collectors, shoe collectors. You spend all this money on something you're not going to use and get the joy out of. Uh-huh. You spent $1,500 on a bottle that you are not going to drink, maybe but once. Life is too short.
That's crazy.
If I'm buying $500 sneakers, I'm wearing them. Because one day I'm going to be dead, and I'm not going to tell anybody, hey, I had some cool sneakers in my closet. I wear them because they're, you know, they're nice. I'm going to enjoy
it. That's like my signed Murphy jersey.
Yeah.
I wear it.
But you wear it? Why would you wear a signed jersey, though?
What?
It just looks weird walking around with an autograph on you.
No, it doesn't.
I would get a Murphy jersey, not autograph.
Josh likes men's names on him. That's what it really comes down
what?
To. It's kind of weird.
What kind of podcast is this?
Josh, think about the guys that would wear a signed jersey. I guarantee you they're the guys that would pay money to wait in line to get a signature and chop.
No,
fest.
I refute that. I refute that. The kind of guy who wears a signed jersey is a badass like me, okay? Those guys would spend money to put it in a glass case.
Oh, no. Josh, do you know what they do with it at night?
Oh, that's true.
I mean, they cuddle with it. That's where that was going, obviously. There was not any other
indication there. Speaking of being overly emotional about, young men playing baseball. Uh-huh. Did you guys see the video today of Soroka throwing?
I did not, but I heard
hair game is strong.
It was just a 3-second video of him throwing one baseball on flat ground, like long toss, and like all of Braves Twitter. You would have thought it was.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Boggy like set the world on fire with a tweet about it, which like got all kinds of likes and retweets and.
Yeah, he was making fun of it.
He wasn't. He was really liking it. But,
what are you talking about? Yeah. No, he was mocking it. I'll show you the tweet.
No, he was not mocking it. Not at all.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
He was embracing it.
Oh, my gosh. Whatever.
What, were people crying about Mike Soroka throwing long toss?
Basically.
You know, that's probably not the first time he's thrown a baseball, right? I mean,
I don't think they know that.
I mean, he's not coming back from cancer.
These people are starved for love and affection. They have a giant void in their life.
What do you think? I mean, he's never going to throw a baseball again? Like, he ruptures Achilles and he's never to walk again? Like, he wasn't paralyzed. Like, it's a sports injury and it happens. It happens to everybody. I mean,
yeah, but
guys
get
hurt.
Okay. In their defense, though, it's kind of cool when somebody comes back.
Like, yeah, it's cool, but like,
you're excited about it.
Okay, like, I remember when this happened. NBA season 2 years ago, Gordon Hayward, first game of the Celtics, and he breaks his ankle. And Twitter lit up. Kevin Durant was prayers up for Gordon Hayward. I'm like, yeah, dude, he hurt his ankle. He doesn't have leukemia. He's not in a life or death situation. It's funny where like people will act like we'll send prayers when someone sprains an ankle. And I'm like, dude, you play sports for a living. Like,
or positive vibes if you're an atheist.
Positive vibes are my favorite. Positive vibes are the best.
Positive vibes, according to atheists, are more effective.
Like Joe Burrow yesterday, tears his ACL, his MCL. And I'm like, man, that stinks, man. But Joe Burrow's going to be fine. Like, he'll come back. Like, it's part of playing, being a pro athlete is you get hurt sometimes.
I guess to play devil's advocate there a little bit.
Maybe I'm just mean and jaded.
Well, no, but there are times that you end up with what seems semi-innocuous, and then you end up with Alex Smith with half his leg getting eaten off.
True.
And, hey, he did make it back, but, yeah, that's not your typical story, for sure. But there's been times where guys did have seemingly mundane injuries that ruined a career.
Right. And you know what I'm saying? To be fair, we don't know how Soroka's going to be next year. I'm assuming he'll be fine. He'll carry on with a good career.
It was just an Achilles heel. He's already fine. He could have probably pitched back in October.
Throwing a baseball is not like some,
Yeah, but okay. So on the other side of that, Jason Hayward takes a ball to the face, and he was not the same for 5 years. Like, he's now finally kind of.
It was never that good. It was never that good to begin with. How about that?
He was. He was pretty good.
He wasn't as good as Markakis.
He was before that.
Okay.
He was before he got hit in the face.
Charlie Culberson took a pitch to the face, and now he gets 7 at-bats a season.
Yeah, I mean, so. The story of this is if you ever take balls to the face, it really messes up your baseball career.
Right.
Just saying. Fellas, speaking of taking balls to the face, Robinson Cano gets busted. He's suspended for the entire 2021 season for using PEDs. Now, there's two parts to this story. First of all, I would like, before we jump on to where I know Josh would like to discuss, before we get to that, Josh, let's talk for a moment about how stupid Robinson Cano is to get caught taking PEDs in 2020. You know what I'm saying? Like you
not
really
just,
don't
not
have
just
anything
any
else
PEDs,
to do.
But a particular one who that, from what I read, is like the one. Like it's the Cadillac of like the big
right,
boy,
right.
Like, you know,
it's like the
Bash Brothers,
too.
You know, yeah, it's 1990, like, baby, gonna do some roids.
Stanzalol or whatever.
Yeah.
It is. It's like Stanza LOL for sure. That's for sure. Laugh out loud because he took Stanzalol. You know, and it, like, I don't understand the logic of you've been busted. Why would you take this again? Especially in the time of Corona where they're trying to test you for everything anyway. Like what?
Yeah,
are we sure that Steve Cohen didn't inject this into Robinson Cano so he doesn't have to pay him $24 million?
That's a good question, JT. I mean, for sure.
And honestly, if he's this, then how long has he been using steroids? Like how long has he been getting away with? I mean,
his entire career. Ever
Robinson Cano at one point was a surefire Hall of Fame.
Yeah, Robinson Cano has probably done steroids the exact same amount of time that Alex Rodriguez has.
And I would guess this is not like Andy Pettit, where he's like, oh, yeah, my shoulder was hurt, so I tried steroids for a week. Like, okay, you tried steroids for a week, and that just happened to be the week you got caught. All right. Yeah, I believe that. But at one point, he was the best offensive second baseman we've ever seen. Like, he was on that par to surpass anybody at second base.
He's been pretty good up until he came to New York, even. I mean,
now it's a year and a half. A year and a half. He's going to lose his career.
Dude, he was good last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he was hitting like almost 400 last year. He was insane.
That's what the steroids do.
Oh, I know.
They make you good.
Yeah. Yeah. The second part of this is the hilarious hypocrisy of Hall of Fame voters who came out and informed us all that this is the nail in the coffin, that Robinson Cano will never be a Hall of Famer, that he can't make it into the Hall of Fame. And these were the same people, the same outraged people were the ones last year that said it's inevitable that we vote in Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and fill in the blank other Hall of Famers because they deserve it.
Yeah. Oh, hey, Jay Jaffe, how are you doing?
What? I would say that they are much better players, Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds.
Yes,
specifically,
but
much better than Robinson Cano.
Agreed, but okay, Jay Jaffe, I screenshotted some of his writings about this to troll the crap out of him. It's not just that him and many others, and Jay doesn't have a vote yet. He will, I think, in a couple of years.
He should. He should. Like, he should have a vote.
Whatever. Well, Jay Jaffe wrote this thing about, should PEDs disqualify people like Bonds and Clemens? It's a really good article. I loved it. And at the end of it, he kind of drives home the point, look, this is the hall. This is a museum. It's, you know, it's what Ken has talked about for years and that I used to disagree with that I now agree with. But the idea that, listen, it's a museum. It's the good, bad, the ugly. Let them in. Everybody was doing it. It wasn't against the rules. It wasn't illegal. They were just, you know, taking some roids. Let them in, whatever. You know, it shouldn't matter. Basically, it shouldn't matter if you did roids or not. The same people are saying about Robinson Cano, this does matter. This is two strikes. I'm like, oh really? So two is the magic number. So two is the magic number? Is that what we're going with now?
I think it's the suspensions, though. Like, at least you could argue Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens were never suspended for steroids. Like, you could say, like, we don't have a smoking gun. We don't have a failed test to be able to pin on them.
No,
the
you
way
just
we
have
do
a juror's
Cano,
testimony
or
where they lied about it.
I mean, we all know they took steroids. There's no doubt. But we don't have the you don't have like the Manny Ramirez suspension like you do with Robinson.
I don't care. Yeah, they're a bunch of hypocritical idiots.
So a couple things. JT, first of all, you made the statement that Robinson Cano is not as good as Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. And while I'm not really disagreeing with that, 3 minutes before that, you said Robinson Cano at one point was on trajectory to be the best second baseman of all time, which, in my opinion, does put him in the same ballpark as Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens.
In the same ballpark. I mean, especially if they're playing each other, they'd be in the same ballpark. But you can be the best second baseman of all time and not be Barry Bonds. I mean,
it depends, JT. Like, if
you say Joe Morgan is the best second baseman of all time, you could still say that Barry Bonds is a much better hitter. Like, Barry Bonds is a top five all-time player.
But what I'm saying is, if we're talking Hall of Fame, then, like, it's still obvious, like, to me, that if you're saying, like, to me, Robinson Cano is a Hall of Famer. Like,
he's got the number. Numbers-wise,
he is. No, even if you don't like steroids or do like steroids, he's a Hall of Famer. He is what the game is. I don't think that, but in my opinion, because of what baseball has done and being two-faced, lying bastards about wanting players to perform at the top level and we will pay you the most money so long as you don't get caught. And if you do get caught, we really don't care because the next time you get a contract, we'll pay you more money because you are super good at baseball now. The league supported that. The league built the structures around that. And now the league thinks half-year suspensions and slapping someone's hand on the wrist is going to like deter guys from trying to get $60 million in a year in contracts. And so for me, like, you built this, you live with it, put him in the hall, you know?
Yeah, Robinson Cano, if you go by Jay Jaffe's war, Jaws, Jay Jaffe invented this new metric called Jaws, which takes a player's best 7 years of war, averages them out, right? Robinson Cano, surefire Hall of Famer. Like, better than Ryan Sandberg, Jackie Robinson, Craig Biggio, Roberto Alomar, just name a few. I mean, that is Jay Jaffe's very own metric. And the very guy who, I mean, basically like yells from the top of the mountain with a bullhorn, obnoxiously, in my opinion, about how we shouldn't disparage, you know, the Bonzes and the Clemens because of steroids is now just, it's tribal. It's like this tribal thing.
Hang on. Is JT's wife nailing him into his room so that he can't escape?
Ma! Like, Meatloaf!
Yeah, what is that?
We're doing a podcast here. We have 13 patrons listening to this. And now you're putting up what? You're putting up hanging curtains now?
We have at least 3 listeners. Okay?
Michael Lane is listening to this. And you're
Michael Lane, we have Braves stats guy, Paul, and we got some Moose guy who's like a reformed Southern Baptist.
She just goes right back into it.
We have 4 listeners.
Bam, bam.
She's been painting the living room and is now putting the curtains.
So back to Robinson Cano. If you pull up Robinson Cano's war numbers and his Jaws, which again, Jaws is a player's best 7 years of war, averaged out, Robinson Cano, surefire, no doubter, Hall of Famer, according to Jay Jaffe's very own metrics, and then Jay Jaffe gets on Twitter, Jay Jaffe, far left,
it's a fun name to say.
Trump hating Jay Jaffe gets on Twitter, schooling us why Robinson Cano is no longer eligible.
But I don't think he's saying that by the numbers, though. He's not saying his numbers aren't good enough. Like, by the numbers, he's a Hall of Famer, no doubt.
But by the numbers, he's also said that Barry Bonds deserves to be there.
Because I think you can add in the years before. If we go by the Game of Shadows book and the testimony when Barry Bonds started doing steroids.
Well, you could. I mean, these numbers for Robinson Cano are current or to now. So I mean,
if you take before he got busted with steroids, Robinson Cano would still qualify there.
Yeah,
we can look at Barry Bonds and tell when he started taking steroids, and there's documentation from the Balco Labs of when he became a. Now other things we don't maybe we don't know all the story, but we have a pretty clear indication with Bonds. Of this is the point where he said, I got to get after 1998,
Jaffe is a postmodern hack. He's a postmodern, tribalistic, far-left, socialist hack. Okay? I respect him because he wrote a book. Anybody can write a book, Jay.
It's a good book.
Also, recommend it. Also, okay. You write for Fangraphs. Okay? I honestly, like my resume, my baseball resume might be better than Jay Jaffe's resume. I'm just saying. I wrote for Tomahawk Tech, which I think is a step higher than Fangraphs, okay?
By the way, they mentioned us in their article the other day.
They did, yeah. We got a. Yeah. I was getting like texts about that. So shout out to
Alan. Well, let's be 100% honest. They didn't mention us. They mentioned our name, but they were referencing Boggy and Boggy's work. You know, we'll take credit for it, but it was 100% Boggy. So anyway, look, fellas, this is the thing that even if you take away the steroids, okay, here's the ultimate hypocrite part of this. They say, okay, Robinson Cano can't make the Hall of Fame, right? But the same people that said that don't just vote for Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. They don't vote for Fred McGriff. And to me, that's the indictment, is you say that this stuff is supposed to be get rid of it.
Or so Dale Murphy too, but yeah.
Sure, yeah. Sure. But Fred McGriff, without a doubt, was like the best player in baseball that we know was clean. Yep. Like, 100%, no doubt clean, had the most home runs in baseball of anyone over from, 1987 through, 2000 or something?
2003.
96? Yeah, okay. Most home runs in baseball and never had any doubts about him being clean.
Clean home runs, to clarify.
Right, right. And to clarify, the only people ahead of him would be Barry Bonds, Edgar Martinez, there's
Sosa,
everyone
McGuire.
Ahead of Sosa and McGuire. Yeah. And McGriff was five, I think. So he had the most known clean home runs, and yet he doesn't get voted into the Hall of Fame.
Right.
To me, that's hypocrisy at the greatest level. Like, fine, you say no steroids guys in, I get it. Somehow, Fred McGriff has to be on your ballots if you're going to say that, and he's not.
Well, McGriff doesn't have 600 home runs. Well, yeah, because he didn't take steroids. If he did, best believe Fred McGriff would be at least over 550.
The reason Fred McGriff isn't in the Hall of Fame is because he played for 12 teams. If Fred McGriff played for the Yankees or the Braves, or heck, if Fred McGriff played for no-name Detroit Tigers for 13 years, then Fred McGriff is instant Hall of Famer because everybody knows him from one uniform that he put on. Instead, he played for 14 different teams? I don't know. It's a bunch. He played a bunch of different places on 1 and 2 year
Six
deals.
Or seven teams, but yeah.
He crushed everywhere he went, and yet never had consistently. That being said, he wasn't always the best guy on his team. Like, there were other people that you noticed. Even when he was with the Braves, there was Andrew Jones that was there. There was other people on that team. There was the big three that you talked about. There was Chipper Jones part of that. So, he was never like the big headline name most of the time, so that's why he's not in the Hall of Fame. But coming back to this whole thing, like, to me, Josh, you actually brought this up, and that was where I saw it. Was like, if they're going to say Cano can't get in for the numbers, show me where you voted for guys you know were clean to be in the Hall. Otherwise, you're just clickbait BS.
This goes back to kind of JT's answer to the Hall of Fame when he kind of, opened our minds that one night on your front porch smoking cigars, Ken. We're sitting there, and JT kind of told us his vision of the Hall of Fame, and it clicked. And the idea of it is, like, just imagine, 10 to 20 people, industry people, probably – ex-players, executives, or whatever, and they vote for the Hall of Fame, and you open it up. And this way you would have guys like, Bonds and Clemens. You'd have, the Ted Turners. You'd have Murphy in there, no doubt, Fred McGriff. And then even, weirdos like, Tim Lincecum, Ryan Howard, those kind of guys. And what happens now is, and I'm poo-pooing on Jay Jaffe, but he's a good example of this. These over-analytical guys who are just they're so married to the numbers that they're now hypocritical. When you know what I mean? When you're just...
Yeah. Well, and that's baseball. Baseball's a numbers game. And because if I say, throwing out there, if I say 56, you know what I'm talking about.
Actually, I don't have a clue.
Okay. Joe DiMaggio's hitting streak.
Oh yeah,
I didn't know that. Okay,
four. If I say what was it, 408.
Ted Williams.
Okay, 755. I mean, these are numbers.
I know 755. Right, I know that one. I didn't know 408. Sorry.
If I said Emmitt Smith is the all-time rushing leader, you guys got any idea how many rushing yards? I can't even tell you anymore who is throwing for the most passing touchdowns.
22,000.
I have no idea. No idea. But that's baseball is so married to the majestic numbers. Whereas football is like, yeah, he was famous. Yeah, put him in. Like Terrell Davis won a Super Bowl MVP and a league MVP. He played for like 7 years. Yeah, man, he was famous. Put him in. The Hall of Fame, duh. Baseball overthinks everything so much. They're so married to these numbers that you're
That's
right.
what I'm trying to say.
They say, like, ooh, these guys are tainted with steroids, but then they can't wrap their minds around, well, yeah, Fred McGriff didn't have that many home runs because he wasn't doing steroids.
Yeah.
And still I think can't that's, wrap their minds around that he didn't have 500 homers.
I think that's where baseball is lost in general, is football has figured out how to tell a story or make people famous, if you want to put it that way, a story.
Yeah.
A lot better than baseball has.
Absolutely.
Baseball used to be great at it because you used to not have the game on TV all the time, and so you relied on storytellers to tell you the story. You relied on people like Ernie Johnson and people like Harry Carey.
Chip Carey.
And Skip Carey, you know, and different ones to tell you the story. You relied on the guy from... God, I'm blanking. Bob Uecker to tell you the story. You know, you relied on
Vin Scully, all those guys.
Vin Scully, there you go. Yeah. We're going to get there. Right.
Harry Callis. I mean, there's so many.
And they did not call numbers. Joe Simpson. They called a game. They told you a story about the game. And like, they created a story as
Jeff Francoeur.
So, please shut up. So, you know, like Vin Scully, Vin Scully was sitting in the position where they hit the World Series home run. He's calling the World Series, and he doesn't say a word for 2 minutes after the hit.
Yeah.
He just lets the crowd roar.
If y'all younger listeners are listening and don't know what Ken's talking about, YouTube Hank Aaron's record-breaking home run that he hit. It was 75. Or 56. 55? Yeah, 55.
Well, the record breaking was 714.
715
was the breaking. Yeah, 715 was the breaker.
Yeah, watch that YouTube video. Watch Vin Scully's call or
Jack Buck, you know, Kirk Gibson. I don't believe what I just saw. I mean,
where football learned to do this is if you go back and you look at man, my mind's struggling tonight. Howard Cosell. Mm-hmm. Look, Howard Cosell was one of the most hated broadcasters, period, in all of America. And yet people tuned in for the story of Howard Cosell and the story of the NFL. Like, they tuned in to hate him. They tuned in because he was the heel, and they loved that about it. They tuned into that Monday Night Football booth when Cosell was there, and it had Don Meredith, and those guys. That was like the biggest dysfunctional group of guys. Like, they didn't get along at all. There was times that it was reported Don Meredith wanted to whip Howard Cosell's butt. Like, they nearly got into a fist fight, and yet it was immaculate storytelling. They were so good at hooking you that it could be the two worst teams in the league, and you live to see Monday Night Football. Now, some of that was not being overdrenched with constant football products.
It was rare.
There was a lot of there's a lot of other factors to it, but they figured out how to tell a story. Baseball used to be great at telling a story, but now baseball is really good at telling you numbers.
Yeah, it's weird because you're telling me a guy that hits 400, say off the top of my head, we'll say 470 home runs. Well, he didn't hit 500. Okay, he played a 15-year career. So you're telling me if he hits two more homers each year that he's suddenly a Hall of Famer, but he's not because he hit 38 and he didn't hit 40?
Right.
What? That makes no sense. Like, the difference in that is minuscule.
Yeah.
Like, who cares if... So, you know, like a guy like Fred McGriff, I don't have it off the top of my head. You have to look it up, but he's in the 400s. He's not far from 500. I believe
he's
over
454, I think. Okay. If I'm... I'll look it up, but I think
so.
I remember
you're
that
telling me over Fred McGriff, who I would guess off the top of my head played a 15-year, 16-year
493.
And you know good and damn well that if Fred McGriff had 500 homers, he would now have eclipsed the magic number of 500 homers. So yeah, if you have, take any 7 years of Fred McGriff's long career, add one home run in each of those seasons, and all of a sudden he's a Hall of Famer?
Simply do this, JT. Take off the strike months from 1994, add a full season, and he's got 500 home runs.
Seven homers. There you go. It's seven home runs. Seven home run different. Don't be so married. Yes, 500 homers is cool. It's a great accomplishment. But don't be so married to the 500 number that you don't let in a guy with because he had 493.
A lot
493 homers is really dang good.
A lot of it, too, is the way voting is done, right? So a large reason why Fred McGriff is not in the Hall of Fame is not really just because of what we're saying. It's actually because of his popularity.
Yeah.
And in a way, you can't, in a weird way, you can't actually fault some of the voters that much. Here's why. It's not their fault they have a vote, a lot of them. So the Baseball Writers Association, they have 500-ish writers. Many of them are just sports writers. I mean, I've gone back and forth with some of these guys on Twitter who, one guy, I lit this one guy for not voting for Fred McGriff a few years ago, and we went back and forth. He's a nice guy, but I gave him shit. He could take it. He was the Detroit Pistons beat writer. Okay, he hasn't written or he hasn't covered baseball in maybe 30 years, and that guy has a Hall of Fame vote. There's another guy I talked to. He was a sports writer for the Miami Sun, I think it was. And he mainly, true story, wrote about food. A little bit of sports, a lot about food. And this goober didn't vote for Fred McGriff. And of course, your boy told him how wrong he was, you know. But these are just two examples. These guys exist and females exist. Sports writers who cover other sports are voting for the Baseball Hall of Fame. It's stupid. If you told like a hockey purist, right? You're a new hockey fan, JT. Hockey purists are wonderful. If you told a hockey purist, hey, for your Hall of Fame, we're going to rely on these guys who, you know, just cover sports for the AJC.
David O'Brien's
going to vote for the Hockey Hall of Fame. Like that happens with baseball.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, say what you want about Jay Jaffe, but the fact that he doesn't have a vote for the Hall of Fame, but the Detroit Pistons beat writer does.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm Jay Jaffe. Like, yeah, you may disagree with him, but Jay Jaffe is way more well-versed in baseball than the guy doing the beat for the Detroit Pistons.
I don't have a problem with numbers guys having a vote. I have a real problem with guys like Josh is talking about having a vote. I mean,
Why not Jay Jaffe getting a vote for the NBA Hall of Fame, you know?
I think it should be something like you have to have written about baseball for at least 15 years, and that being your primary job, To even qualify for the conversation, getting the vote.
And when you're done, when you're retired, you're done voting.
Right. Or you only get to vote. You have to have written a certain number of relevant articles within the last 5 years. You know, like, look, if Peter Gammons retired today, I'm fine with Peter Gammons voting for the rest of his life, at least until his dementia is so great that he can't remember how to fill out a piece of paper.
I think we're
already there.
We may be past that point. But you know what I'm saying. Like, guys that are lifelong, like Ken Rosenthal, if he decided to retire today, I'd be fine with him voting on baseball for the rest of his life, at least as long as he's cognizant. You know, I don't have a problem with that as long as guys actually have devoted their life to the game. But like you say, the guy that's the Detroit Pistons beat writer has not devoted his life to the game.
Dude,
you know,
joke,
not the
man.
Baseball game.
And there, I think the exact number is 4 something. It's like 480 something. The last I checked, this might have been 2 years ago. So maybe
it's a lot.
468. I don't know. That's a lot of people, and I'm telling you, it's so many. It's mostly sports writers.
And based on the way baseball is played, where the athletes don't get to control the ball, it's the only sport where you don't have the ball in your hands. Like if you are coaching basketball and you've got LeBron on your team, a good strategy is, hey, get the ball to LeBron. Make sure he touches it a lot. You'll probably win a lot of games. In baseball, you can't say, hey, we need to give Scott Rowland more at-bats. He shares it with everybody else equally, and then he hits the ball and it goes wherever it goes. So you really have to delve into the numbers a lot more in baseball than just going on. Like there's guys like Mike Mussina was one we looked at. Mike Mussina, we all know him. Yeah, he had a good career. And then you dig into his numbers, and you're like, oh, he's a lot better than I remember him being.
Yeah.
Now, Mike Mussina was not a larger-than-life personality. He never went out of his way to garner attention. But when you look at the numbers, he's better than what you thought he was.
And that's where
there's a lot of guys
help you.
Right.
That's where the numbers people should be like, hey, you're missing somebody.
You really have to be a baseball guy. The Detroit Pistons beat writer isn't going to know those things. He's not going to know how good of a closer Billy Wagner is.
Right.
Because the numbers tell you things that just seeing on TV doesn't. You know, oh, Billy Wagner, he threw a hard fastball. Okay.
It should not be that the numbers are waving around and numbers are trying to convince me that somehow Andrew Jones is not qualified
right.
to the Hall of Fame because of his numbers. Like, what? Like,
but
get out of here.
A guy who covers food now and hasn't covered baseball in 30 years isn't going to realize that Billy Wagner is probably the second best closer of all time.
Right.
But once you dig deeper into his numbers, you go, holy cow. Billy Wagner's a lot better than I remember. I didn't realize this.
Yeah.
You have to kind of do those things in baseball in ways you don't other sports. In football, you can't hide, like, touchdowns.
Yeah.
You know, you can sit there and go, oh, okay, he scored a whole lot of touchdowns, therefore he's good. In baseball, the numbers are a little bit more hidden than that. And so you kind of have to peel it back just a little bit more. There's some numbers that jump out. If a guy has 600 homers, okay. But there's a lot of other numbers where you have to kind of do a little
And again, I think baseball, because it's been around for 150 years, is the numbers are inflated. And what I mean by that is guys that have 20... Okay, so in 150 years of baseball, there's been a lot of guys. Take Omar Vizquel, for instance. We talked about him at length on a previous episode. And Omar Vizquel, if you look at his career war or whatever, it's like 63, right? But he played for 24 years.
Yeah.
Like 24 years at 63 war, that means he was basically a 2 or 3 war player. Like, that's not, I'm not taking anything away. That's pretty amazing that he played for 24 years. Maybe he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. But you can't tell me that 7 years of Andrew Jones wasn't more valuable than 24 years of Omar Vizquel. Like,
sure.
I don't care. You can tell me all day long that his cumulative numbers are bigger and stronger and better, and I'm still like, I don't care. If we're playing baseball tomorrow and I get to pick either of those players in their prime, give me Andrew Jones all day long. Like, he's the much better player than Omar Vizquel.
Here's a question. So let me qualify this with saying, I think Billy Wagner is a surefire Hall of Famer for the reasons JT just laid out. But, you know, in our previous talk, when we talked about our perfect Hall of Fame and how we'd redo it, and, you know, and like the Tim Lincecums of the world would be in, right? Would that exclude guys like Billy Wagner, or would it, you know what I mean? If we went full on, like, kind of like kind of popularity mode a little bit, you know, who had an impact on the game? What player did kids want to be, you know, Josh Hamilton, those kind of guys? Would that hurt guys like Billy Wagner?
Only because he's a relief pitcher.
Yeah.
I don't think it would be because of his stats or anything like that. I mean, do you know anyone that grew up saying, I want to be a relief pitcher?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
No. Maybe Billy Wagner. Kind of a different... Dude, all right, I'm pulling this up. Billy Wagner's ERA plus for his career is 187 for his career. That's, dude, his strikeouts per nine, 11.9 for his career. That's not in a season.
Yeah.
That's his career.
Yeah, he was dominant, man.
Holy cow. Yeah, he was. 231 career ERA as a reliever. 231 career ERA is ridiculous, because that means if you have one bad outing, then your ERA for that season is like a 4.
So,
you know?
So if you want to put Billy Wagner in the Hall of Fame, put his entire career on the Dodgers. He'd already been in the Hall of Fame easily. Put his entire career on the Yankees. He'd have been in the Hall of Fame easily.
Yeah.
You just didn't get, because he's another Fred McGriff type guy that played for multiple teams over different segments, and because of that, he also didn't have a lot of really deep playoff runs.
He did
one or two.
He did, right.
But there was not a lot of really deep playoff runs. So because of that, he didn't get the national notoriety, and he doesn't have that one fan base that's like, yes, Billy Wagner was a beast. You know, like, you know, well, Billy Wagner was really good. Like, Braves fans. If I ask Braves fans to name their top five relievers in their lifetime, how many of them do you think would actually name Billy Wagner?
Probably not a lot.
I bet very few.
Yeah.
I bet there's a lot of Braves fans don't even remember Billy Wagner pitching for the Braves.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And he pitched what, like 3 years, 4 years? Thanks, Josh.
Sorry. Was it 2 years? It was just two, right? It wasn't a lot.
Well, I think it was one year. Remember? People don't remember because Rick Ankiel was on that team. And real Braves fans remember Rick Ankiel.
Gotcha. Yeah. Oh, man. Anyway, all this being said, fellas, let's talk about the Hall of Fame ballot for just a minute. You, Josh Brown, you, JT Holton, me, Ken Hendricks, we've all been given a vote this year. Imagine for a moment. Unfortunately, they don't give us votes. But if they did, tell me, if you're looking at the 2021 Baseball Hall of Fame ballot, I will run through the names very quickly that are on the ballot. Bobby Abreu, Barry Bonds, Mark Burley, A.J. Burnett, Roger Clemens, Michael Kadire, Dan Herron, LaTroy Hawkins, Todd Helton, Tim Hudson, Torrey Hunter, Andrew Jones, Jeff Kent, Andy Pettit, Aramis Ramirez, Manny Ramirez, Scott Rowland, Curt Schilling, Gary Sheffield, Sammy Sosa, Nick Swisher, Shane Victorino, Omar Vizquel, Billy Wagner, and Barry Zito. Of all those names, what's your ballot? Now, they're technically only allowed to vote for 10. I say screw that. Tell me, who are you voting in, fellas? Josh, JT, whichever one of you is ready, fire away.
I'm not going to be able to vote for 10. Like, anybody can vote for 10 is kind of a crazy person. Because, not 10. You know what? I'd say I'm just going down alphabetically here. Todd Helton. Todd Helton's got to be it. Todd Helton is the greatest Colorado Rocky of all time. Yes, I know his Coors Field, but his numbers away from it aren't that bad either. He was a masher for 15 years, played for one franchise, and was Peyton Manning's backup quarterback in Tennessee. So,
also the best goatee of all time.
Solid goatee. Thick.
Very, very good.
Yeah. Heavy goatee.
There are gay men today that are still trying to copy that goatee. Like, bear.
Brooks and Andrew- Dunn tried to pull it off. He couldn't do it.
That's true.
Andrew Jones, the Braves homer of me wants me to, Andrew Jones, because, like, I watched Andrew Jones when he was a teenager here in Macon. He played for the Braves, and he was 18 years old. He's got a .253 career average. He's probably the greatest defensive center fielder of all time. There was a huge drop-off, too. These are all facts. This is not opinion. There was a huge drop-off.
Okay, Mr. We listen too much to the numbers. Okay.
.253. You said that Omar Vizquel was a 2-3 WAR player his whole career. .253 does not scream Hall of Famer. Come on, .253.
It does when you hit 400 something home runs and that other sentence you said, greatest defender of all time,
center fielder, not greatest defender.
Okay, greatest center fielder of all defensive center fielder of all time. That seems like that should be followed up by.
Well, let him continue. Okay. We'll dismantle him.
No, I mean that's my only hang up with Andrew. I want Andrew to be in, but the .253 average is the thing. Scott Rowland's a Hall of Famer. Scott Rowland's definitely a Hall of Famer. There's no doubt about it. Scott Rowland's metrics, his numbers are better than what you think, and he's a better player. Curt Schilling, for all the reasons Josh has given, was a much better. I'm doing a podcast. This is live. I know. So it's good. So.
Tell her I just saw the pictures on Facebook. Looks great.
Yeah, Josh saw it on Facebook.
I love the wood panel walls. Seriously.
I like the wood.
No, I love it. Seriously, though.
Very presidential.
Yeah, man.
Curt Schilling is much better. People don't like him personally, so that may be something that, you know. It's not his fault that Curt Schilling's kind of a jerk, but whatever. He's a better pitcher than Roy Halladay was. You can't debate that.
He's also alive.
He's a better pilot, too. And then Billy Wagner. Oh, my God. Everything we just said about Billy Wagner. Billy Wagner is the second best closer of all time to Mariano. And that's not really the big. I mean, you're telling me, did Lee Smith get in? Bruce Sutter is in? Goose Gossage?
Eckersley?
Billy Wagner's better than all of them.
Yep.
So, I'm just...
Also, if you look at regular season numbers, he owns Mariano Rivera. Now, Mariano Rivera is a first ballot Hall of Famer. I mean, what he did in the postseason is insane, but he was also on the Yankees for all those years, right? Mm-hmm. But if you just look at regular season numbers, Billy Wagner owns Mariano Rivera. And I like to remind Yankees fans of that often on Twitter.com.
And I could see an argument for Omar Vizquel only because he's in the argument. Just the same reason I guess I'd let Andrew in when you are arguably the best defensive player at your position. Omar Vizquel's in that argument. Sure.
Goodness.
Right? Should we give him? Should we take away his vote?
What are you talking about? I mean, how is that? That's. I'm saying Andrew Jones is in the Hall of Fame. I just don't think he's like that surefire.
Just let him continue.
I'm okay. Letting him. I'm not interrupting.
Oh, you guys think defense is everything?
No, we. I really don't.
Well, that's the only reason Andrew's getting in.
Just let him continue.
Okay, keep digging the hole.
Yep.
What else you got for me, JT?
That's it. I got like seven guys.
All right, Josh, would you like to go next before I, or should we rebuttal first?
I'll go. So my ballot would be Nick Swisher. That's it. Just kidding. So my ballot's Barry Bonds, Clemens, Helton for the reasons that JT laid out. Andrew Jones, Jeff Kent, Andy Pettit would be on my ballot. Manny Ramirez, Scott Rolen, Curt Schilling, Gary Sheffield, Sammy Sosa, Omar Vizquel, and Billy Wagner. Now, let's revisit Andrew Jones, shall we?
Hang on. Let me get my ballot, and then we will do the Andrew Jones discussion. Is that okay?
Okay. Do you want to pick mine apart at all, though?
I actually kind of liked yours. I didn't have too much trouble with it.
Okay, all right.
For me, I would go Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Todd Helton, Andrew Jones. I'm not putting Jeff Kent in.
How dare you?
I'm sorry. I wouldn't.
He's a conceal and carry guy, man. That's awesome. Come on now.
I don't care. Manny Ramirez, Scott
Rolen. He has a mustache.
Curt Schilling.
He got busted because he carried a gun on a plane. He was just like a conceal carry guy. And he has
Billy
a mustache.
I'm not putting Gary Sheffield or Sammy Sosa in. I'm definitely not putting Omar Vizquel in. I'm just saying, like, no thanks. Billy Wagner. And I would have to think long and hard and look at the numbers more on Barry Zito. Like, seriously, I would need to look at the numbers.
How are you going to not put in Omar Vizquel and Gary Sheffield? But you're like, you know, I'm going to think about Barry Zito.
Because he's Barry Zito. He was a lot better than you thought he was.
Oh, my God. Well, a lot of these guys are better than you thought they were. They wouldn't be on the damn ballot, okay? Like, LaTroy Hoggins was probably better than you thought he was because he's on the damn ballot. Dan Heron, apparently, probably better than you thought he was because he's on the ballot.
Yeah.
Dan Heron.
Zito wouldn't make it.
AJ Burnett. He was good. Mark Burley's probably a little better than you thought he was because he's on the ballot.
Zito really sucked in the end of his career. So, yeah, I wouldn't put Zito in. Okay.
Okay, thank God.
No Zito. I told you I'd have to look at the numbers more. I hadn't, like, looked at his numbers. But, yeah, I'm not putting Sammy Sosa in.
Why wouldn't you put in Sheffield?
Mainly because I don't know.
I think you would.
I don't think I would.
So can I try to win you over?
I'm looking at his – let me look at his numbers.
Okay.
He had 509 home runs. That's legit.
Hang on. So listen, the exact same OPS.
Yeah, I'll put him in.
Hang on.
I'll put him in.
All right, cool. So Gary Sheffield – the exact same OPS as Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah.
Okay. A better OPS plus than Ken Griffey Jr.
Sure.
A better WRC plus than Ken Griffey Jr. A better WOBA.
He also had 60.5 WAR in his career, which is pretty dang impressive.
Dude, Gary Sheffield.
He should be
80 grade. Here's why he's not in. He's an asshole.
Downtime All-Star?
Writers can't stand Gary Sheffield. If you think Barry Bonds was an asshole, Sheffield was an asshole.
He was also Major League Player of the Year 1 year. He won a World Series in 97. He won a batting title.
Incredible.
He was a five-time Silver Slugger. Yeah, he should definitely be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my mistake for not knowing Gary Sheffield's numbers better. But
that's all good.
Without a doubt, Gary Sheffield.
My thing with Vizquel
should definitely be in the Hall of Fame.
I'm not going to try to win you over with Vizquel because there's really not a lot of numbers I can throw at you. To me, it's just like the dude played for 24 seasons.
Yeah,
and he was just – I loved watching him. He,
I get it.
He
I
was
get it.
So
like, I'm
much
just,
fun to watch.
I'm just not voting for him for the Hall of Fame. But, like, I get why people do.
So, Andrew Jones, I've got a beef about Andrew Jones.
Yes, we should talk about Andrew Jones now that JT's back where he can listen to us.
I was reading his chapter in J. Jaffe's Cooperstown casebook. An autographed copy on my shelf.
Oh, shut up.
Such a dingus.
So Andrew Jones, we've probably already talked about this before, so I'm probably not going to say anything new that JT hasn't heard. But, like, I get triggered with Andrew Jones because, first of all, I don't care about his batting average because he had more home runs than Mike Piazza. And I always say Mike Piazza because Mike Piazza got inducted based purely on home runs. Yeah. Obviously,
who brought more men home?
Shut up. probably Mike Piazza with all his Perk Plus commercials. But what I'm saying is Andrew Jones was way more than a glove. Wait, he was a power bat, dude.
He hit 434 home runs in his career.
He was a power bat. He hit 52 home runs one year. Stupid. Like, he was a power bat.
Here's what hurts Andrew Jones. Let me jump in before you get to that. If you take the 7 years of great production in Atlanta, not his rookie season,
take that season out. 10 years.
I'm just going with seven. If you take 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 years. 8 years of great production in Atlanta, and you dropped the rookie season because it was only half a season. He batted .270 over all those seasons.
If you reversed Andrew Jones's career, I think he's a Hall of Famer.
Instantly.
If he started out first five seasons, he was like, meh, and then a decade of sheer dominance, best defensive center fielder you've ever seen in your entire life, coupled with hitting 40 to 50 dingers a year. Are you kidding me? He's a surefire Hall of Famer. He's not in because his last 5 years, which is a shame. It sucks. And I get that. You judge a player on his whole career. I get that. You do. So I do understand that. But you got to look at this 10 years.
The guy doesn't make it into the Hall of Fame. Because the last 5 years, he's like, hey, they're going to pay me millions of dollars to play baseball in the summer months. And me kind of suck at it even. Yeah, I think I'll go take the money. I mean, I'm just saying, like, that drags his career numbers down because he didn't perform all the way through there. But it's not like it was a three-year stint. It was like,
also,
like you said, Josh, 8 to 10 years, depending on how you want to look at it.
Also, I get a little perturbed when I see, you know, bloggers and podcasters and stuff and fans speculate about him taking steroids because a knee-jerk reaction a lot of people have is, oh, so he actually stopped being good once steroids were illegal against the rules. That's not true. MLB, first year they started testing was 2005. In 2005, your boy Andrew hit 52 something dingers that year, you know. So I don't think he did. Maybe he did roids, but also, if he did do steroids, let's say he did. Andrew Jones is the only player that it didn't have a physical effect on him because he looked like a pudgy.
Are chicken wings a steroid?
Are lap dances steroids?
I think the only steroids he got were the ones that are injected into chickens.
Yeah.
I think.
But I've heard that. I've heard
that
from a lot of
people. The hot wing bar at the Gold Club more often. And
I've heard people say that's why they didn't vote for him for the Hall of Fame, because they thought he did steroids.
Yeah, I've heard that
too,
man.
People say that.
Yeah.
Like, did you see his body?
Right,
because his career fell off the ledge, they said, oh, he quit taking steroids and he got fat.
I think his career fell off the ledge because he didn't take steroids. He got fat because he enjoyed extracurriculars a little too much.
He enjoyed chicken and beer. Yeah.
He didn't have the discipline. You know, that's fine. Gosh, set me loose in Atlanta in my 20s and give me $20 million a year. See what I do. You know, I don't fault him for that. But, no, I don't think he was a steroid guy at all. I mean, and I think, even without failing a test, there is enough evidence through the Mitchell report and things like that. Nobody failed a test. Like, hardly any of these steroid guys failed a test. I mean, that just didn't really happen. We had to find out through other avenues. Guys like Palmeiro failed a test, but Bonds, Clemens, Ortiz, you know, these weren't guys that came out and were suspended. or anything like that. So, and there was never any linkage to Andrew and steroids. Now, Sheffield was linked, though, because Sheffield worked out with Bonds. They're like cousins.
Oh, he was?
Yeah.
Sheffield was linked totally to the Balco to, stuff.
But yeah. I also don't care. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. The bad way yeah. alone puts, I mean, Sheffield's badass.
I will say this, JT, in defense of your whole center field, he's a defensive glove guy. Andrew Jones is one of the 10 best hitting center fielders of all time.
He really is, man. He's way more than a glove. Seriously.
I think people just overrate center fielders. Like, especially today, I think people think, like, center fielders are just automatically these guys that crush baseballs. They don't. Like, center fielders have always been glove-first guys. And any offensive production you got out of them, well, I mean, to be honest,
well, you got
10
Willie
years
Mays
ago,
and Mickey Mantle. Those are
oh, yeah, there's
bats.
A couple. There's a couple.
Duke
but
Snider.
To be, like I
did,
said,
did Duke
I think he's top 10.
I thought he did he not?
I want to say the Duke played left. I don't know. Let me look it up.
But look, 10 years ago, Ender Inciarte, as bad as he's been with his bat, would have been fantastic center fielder in most people's teams. Like, people would have been happy to have him. Like, no, there wouldn't have been fans complaining about him. There wouldn't have been all this craziness about ship Ender. Ryan would not have been coming up with trades for Ender every third day. Heck,
what's
we played
center fielder. Wow.
Wasn't Rick Ankiel was a center fielder, right? Like, he played center field some for the Braves, right?
Some, I believe. I don't
Real
know if you
remember that.
Remember that.
Real Braves fans remember that. But, I mean, we had freaking Kenny Lofton was a big bat center fielder for the Braves. And I think Kenny Lofton.
I think
Lofton
he was just a fast guy. I think he was just, like, fast.
Marquise Grissom. Like, fill in the blank. Who do you want that was such a big bat for center fielder for the Braves?
Gregor
you know
Blanco.
Mark Kotze, Otis Nixon.
Otis Nixon with a big bat. You know, he batted, what, 223 most years?
Hey, easy
he had
now.
An OBP of like 350. But
Otis Nixon ran a 3-second 40. That's all I know. He is astronomical.
I'm about to drop some Otis Nixon knowledge on you because there was one year where he was insane.
Deion Sanders. A little center field for the Braves back in the day.
Oh, yeah. 1992 yeah. Deion Sanders. I could have a whole podcast about that.
The Braves win the World Series. Braves win the World Series in 92. He's got a World Series MVP.
Otis Nixon did have a career 270 batting average. So, not bad. Not bad. But he also had 11 home runs.
Otis, okay, 1991, Otis Nixon, he hit 297 for the Braves with a 371 OBP. In 92, he hit 294 with the Braves. But that 91, he basically hits 300 and has, where's the stolen bases at? Oh, yeah. Has 72 stolen bases in 91 for the Braves.
Ooh, he had a career 620 stolen bases in his career.
Yeah.
Do you know that most players that are active right now, I think even the ones that steal the most, what would you guess, fellas? That the most prolific base stealer that's actively playing right now will end up with 250 stolen bases in their career.
Wow, that's so
I mean,
sad.
It used to be guys would hit triple digits.
That is so sad.
Like, guys used to, but now with sabermetrics, you know, it's not worth the value.
38-year-old Otis Nixon in Toronto, 59 stolen bases.
Otis Nixon was 38 in 1991, I'm pretty sure.
Dude, that's the Coke, baby. That's
Ricky
what that
Henderson.
Coke does,
Ricky Henderson, let me read you his stolen base totals. Just so, because I think some young fans don't remember this part of the game. In 1980,
they really don't.
This is started in 1980. Ricky Henderson, stolen bases, 100. This is in a single season.
Jeez,
100.
Good
56.
God.
130.
This is the kind of stuff we grew up on, kids.
Yeah. 108, 66, 80, 87, 41. He was hurt that year. 93, 77. Then he was hurt 2 years, and then he came back. 65, 58. Then the rest of his career, he was like nicked up on and off. And then in 1998, he's 39 years old, and he's still 66 bases.
Was that the Yankees?
For Oakland.
Or Oakland?
66
oh,
bases
Oakland,
in 1998.
Right.
And then the rest of his career. Look. At 44 years old, he stole three bases for the LA Dodgers.
Ricky Henderson he was injured 1 year in the 80s. It's the only year he didn't lead the league in steals.
Yeah.
And that year,
130 steals in 1 year.
That year, Harold Reynolds was the steals leader for the American League. And Harold Reynolds tells a great story. He said his phone rang one time. And he picked up. And this is no cell phone. This is like house phone. And he picks up and says, hello. And Ricky, being Ricky, says, Henderson here. 60. I had 60 at the All-Star break last year. Hangs up. Boom. That's it. That's the kind of guy Ricky Henderson was. Ricky Henderson, the accounts receiving for the Oakland A's, I think it was, they're doing, you know, returns on checks. And it turns out there was $1 million that never got cashed. And they asked Ricky about it. That was his signing bonus, was $1 million. And yeah, he never cashed the check. He framed it on his wall.
You know, Ricky played for the Mariners in 2000.
I think Ricky played for, I think the Braves were the only team he didn't play. He played for the Long Island Ducks in like 2005.
But people talk about like home running hitting Dodgers and all this kind of stuff. People don't remember that part of the game. Like stolen
really
bases
don't.
Were
fun.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Were awesome.
And now
that's
have,
who you want to be. That's who you want to be. You watch Major League. You want to be Willie Mays Hayes.
You watched
you
the
don't
show.
Be Jay Taylor.
It was a show. And now you have you actually have. I mean, I see these people on Twitter that are like, well, technically, like, you know, a stolen base doesn't really affect the outcome of the game, you know, therefore,
bull.
I'm like, shut up. Shut up. Give me a guy who is taking a pitcher off guard and making a pitcher his bitch on live TV and stealing on him.
Look,
it's
Ricky
a show.
Henderson, Ricky Henderson, just guess, Josh, you may have already looked at it, but just guess. What was his career war?
Oh, I don't know.
What would you guess, JT?
I would guess like 80-something, I guess.
I was going to say in the 90s.
111.2.
Wow.
And that takes out of the account. You can't say that, oh, he played for too many teams like people use against Fred McGriff.
Yeah.
Because Ricky Henderson played for like 9 teams.
Look, Ricky Henderson had 10,961 at-bats in his career. Just shy of 11,000. He had 1,406 stolen bases.
Hey, you know what's
that's
crazy?
That's like 10% of his at-bats, right? Am I doing math right there? Yes.
No.
10% of over 10% of his at-bats ended up with a stolen base.
So you
that's
know it's
insane.
Coming. You couldn't do anything about it. And what's crazy is I remember them having the ceremony when he broke Lou Brock's record.
Yeah,
with
I remember
stolen
that.
Bases. And to me, in today's game, that seems like setting the record for sacrifice bunts. Like, there's no way there would be a ceremony for that today. Like, it seems such an antiquated part of the game that I can't fathom a guy setting a steals record and they actually stop the game and celebrate.
So look, I don't think people understand also the kind of effect Ricky Henderson had on the game. Because when Ricky Henderson got to first base, it wasn't if Ricky Henderson was going to run. It was when Ricky Henderson
exactly.
was going to run. And catchers couldn't throw him out, and it messed with pitchers' heads. Pitchers didn't know what to do with him. They didn't know how to keep him on
it
first base.
It would rattle
base.
A pitcher, right.
Oh, terribly. And Ricky ate it up. He loved it when
the
he
only,
got in a pitcher's
the
head.
Second
oh,
best,
my God.
The second best guy I ever saw do it. Not as good as Ricky, but Ricky was the king, but then afterwards – through my like college years and young adult years, Jose Reyes.
Yeah.
Jose Reyes was an 80 grade badass when he got to first base. He would he would mess you up in the head if you're a pitcher. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
One of
and,
my
and that
favorite
threat was so big because how many times did Otis Nixon turn a average hitter behind him into an RBI machine?
Yeah.
Could you imagine Nick Markakis batting behind Ricky Henderson?
Right.
He would drive in like 200 runs a year.
Yeah, all day. Yeah.
Sorry, JT, what were you about to say?
I was going to say, if you Google Ricky Henderson stories, like, you'll
oh
be in for
God.
A treat. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So, Ricky Henderson was on first base, and John Olerud was playing for the Mets.
Oh, you told us this story before.
Yeah. And he suddenly goes, hey, man, you wear a helmet? I used to play with a guy in Toronto that wore a helmet on first base. Yeah, Ricky, that was me.
Oh, man.
I mean, like, it's like, there's so many good ones. Like, it's incredible.
But see, now, who are guys in the game? Actually, time out. We're going to pick up this discussion in tomorrow's episode of Knock On the Nation. That's going to do it for today's show. Fellas, it's been fun hanging out. Let's finish this tomorrow. That's going to do it. Thanks for hanging out. If you would like to support the show, we sure could use it. You can do so at patreon.com/ Knock On the Nation. Become a patron. Become a citizen of the nation. Hang out with us. Enjoy it. Be fans. Get your own sticker. Get your own t-shirt. Get your own shout-out on the show. We appreciate it. That's going to do it for today.
Thanks for listening to the nation's leading replacement-level podcast. Knockahoma Nation is brought to you by Knockahoma Nation patrons. To become a patron, visit patreon.com/Knockahoma Nation. For new episodes and content, visit knockahomanation.com. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @NakahomaNTN. Special thanks to research assistant Braves Auctions Guy and spiritual advisor John D. Howard. See you next week, knuckleheads.